Empathy itself has three definitions.
Come on.
So what tends to happen is you'll see the word used a lot. So people will talk about empathetic leadership or empathy design or human-centered design, or they'll go, listen empathetically. And nobody knows what it means. So what empathy is, and the way that I explain it, is there are three types of empathy. And unless we're all talking about the same thing, we may all be having very different conversations.
Welcome to Justice Matters, the podcast inspiring a world where everyone belongs. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Today's podcast, we have Leanne Butterworth. She is the founder of Empathy First. She provides consulting, speaking, and various coaching in the area, specifically, of empathy. We get into the nitty-gritty of what true compassionate empathy is and how it can be a force for good in bringing justice in the world. We have lots of things in common, which is really fun. And at the beginning, you'll notice I apologize because I was in the middle of having lunch with my parents when I realized that I'd completely forgotten about our podcast episode. So she graciously waited for me to get home and to be able to record this video and showed me a lot of compassionate empathy, I can tell you that. Well, anyways, let's get back into this episode. It's a great one. I know you're going to enjoy it and share it with your friends. Thanks a lot.
Leanne, thank you for being so patient and waiting for me. I got a phone call a few minutes ago and it was me totally brain fading and forgetting we had this podcast. So I need some empathy. I need some grace and some kindness. But it's a pleasure to finally connect with you. We're going to be talking about your work, Empathy First, and also a bit about your story. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Tim. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. You know, well, I was at QUT, which is kind of where maybe our kind of, and there's intersection of people that have kind of connected with us, Dr. Ruth Knight, who's at QUT, kind of connected us. And I remember when I went to the orientation day for the philanthropy and nonprofit course I've just graduated from. Yeah. And we talked about leadership and we talked about leaders. And what is the one thing that leaders really need? And we all kind of one of the number one things that as we all kind of discussed was this idea of a leader that is empathic, you know, a leader that is. And so that's kind of what you've been doing. But I'm kind of curious as to where you got your drive to do what you do. Tell us a bit about your story. Tell us a bit about where you arrived at where you are now with this great organization.
Absolutely. So you mentioned Dr. Ruth Knight. She's been pivotal in the journey and ACPNS and the grad cert. So I graduated 2018, and that's a huge part of this story. So my background is in human movement studies, exercise physiology, exercise science, and I worked in that for a few years, worked in hospitals, project management, and I ended up actually administering and project managing some small businesses and small nonprofits. And for one of these a few years ago, I developed a project that used virtual reality to simulate psychosis. So it was an advanced.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. It was called Lose Your Mind. It still exists. But what we did was we created a workshop around this really intense 3.5 minute experience, and it was really advanced mental health literacy that we were talking about. And I took that overseas and took it to Iowa, worked with American cops.
Wow.
But what I found was I was working with these nonprofits going, oh, look, I really want to help, but I need more information. I need to do this better.
Yeah.
And so I was looking for further education and found ACPNS, which was 12 months. And my eyes lit up and I went, oh, I think I need to do this. And it scared me terribly because I was 40.
Yeah.
And I graduated uni in 99, or as they're now known, the late 1900s. And so, And so it terrified me going back to uni.
Oh.
So I went back and I just went full steam, went full nerd, and just loved it. And we did this subject called social enterprise.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I found my people. And that was that combination of being able to help people and run a business.
Yes.
And what I realized was Lose Your Mind in and of itself could be a social enterprise.
100%.
So when I broke away from the nonprofit, Lose Your Mind came with me and I ran it as a social enterprise. So the goal was empathy and suicide prevention, but in a really advanced context. COVID hit
yes.
and VR was no more for me. And I said, oh, I can't do it. And so what I found was in all of the workshops that I'd done, so we'd done them with, like I said, American police and CEOs, psychologists, magistrates, but very, very well-intentioned people had no idea how to communicate with empathy. They didn't know what it was. And so through all of this work that I'd done, I kept pulling out these themes of the same thing people were getting wrong again and again and again in all of these workshops. And so I pulled out all of that information, stripped away the VR, created a different experiential learning opportunity. But that's where empathy first came from. So what we've done is I've created a program that really digs deep into what is empathy, why is it important, and how to communicate with empathy. So whether you're a leader in an organization or you're an aspiring leader or a university student or a business who wants to just do better, that's where empathy first sits. So we really break it down and it's always customized to the business. So it's always, what does it mean for you guys? Why is it important for you personally, professionally, for the business? And then how do you do it? What does it mean to you to really get this right? So that's the short
version. That's the journey. I mean, I could see there's probably was never as smooth sailing. You'll probably tap left and right. But it's amazing how you find something that you kind of can really find your niche and find your place.
Absolutely. And the lovely thing is now, I mean, I worked and am still working with the Queensland Social Enterprise Council, working on projects for them, as well as with QUT. So Dr. Ruth Knight actually offered me a tutoring position teaching social enterprise to first year business students. And then in the summer semester, I get to lecture and teach and unit coordinate first year business students over the summer semester, teaching them social enterprise.
So let me ask you.
Fantastic.
Are you tutoring with Jill Lovell?
Yes.
One of your associates. She's Jill Lovell is a very good friend of ours too and has been on this podcast as well. So
yeah. She's adorable.
Oh, she is. And I've heard great things about you. It's been really fun to get on this chat. You know, as I was listening to you, I studied human movements for my first year of uni because I wanted to get into that whole field and I graduated high school in 99 and went straight into human movements and kind of bombed out of that and found my way and have graduated too just recently from the same degree as you and it's been a definitely pivotal thing for me. But I just want to ask you, talked about defining what is empathy, give us your, summary of what really is empathy as opposed to all the other kinds of similar words out there.
Yeah. So even without looking at empathy versus sympathy, empathy versus pity or compassion, empathy itself has three definitions.
Come on.
So what tends to happen is you'll see the word used a lot. So people will talk about empathetic leadership or empathy design or human-centered design, or they'll go, listen empathetically, and nobody knows what it means. So what empathy is, and the way that I explain it, is there are three types of empathy. And unless we're all talking about the same thing, we may all be having very different conversations.
Good.
So the first type of empathy is emotional empathy. So that's the You're sad, I'm sad, we're all sad together. I jump down your emotional rabbit hole without really taking care of my own emotional needs in the process. If I do take care of my emotional needs, then yeah, I can jump down
that's fine.
I can just keep feeling the feelings. And that's okay. But what tends to happen is we neglect our own needs in the process and we burn out. And then we don't have enough left for the next person.
Yep.
So that's emotional empathy. We don't really play in that space. The next one's cognitive empathy, which is I know what you're going through, or I understand what it's like to be you. So that's that I'm putting myself in your shoes.
Sure.
Now, if I've really, really listened, that one's okay. What can happen with that one is when we make assumptions, or if we've done, let's say a virtual reality experience, and then we say to someone, oh, I know what it's like to be you. Or somebody tells you something and you go, yeah, I know what that's like. I've had that too.
Right.
The trouble with that is that's not an empathetic response. So we talk about compassionate empathy, which is the third kind, which is the ability to share and understand the feelings of another person and respond appropriately. So what you find then is you've got an element of emotional, an element of cognitive, but you really focus on it, on that responding appropriately piece. So how to make someone feel heard, valued, visible, that's where connection is built. That's where trust is built. Because with emotional and cognitive, you could feel it or you could think it, but you come out with a, oh, you should just talk to a counselor, and you've destroyed that relationship.
Yes.
So it has to be those three parts of the puzzle. So share and understand the feelings of another person means to listen, means to validate, means to identify emotions, and then respond appropriately. And we use a lovely framework that's really easy to remember. We don't use checklists and action plans.
Yeah.
But the absolute heart of what we do is using compassionate empathy to make every single person that you come into contact with or has contact with your business heard, valued, and visible, because that's where the good stuff happens.
Yes. There's this sense of not needing to control, to fix, to change. And I even think in just, learning in a relationship with my wife, right? Just learning to, like, do I have to fix the problem that my wife's sharing? Do I have to change them? Or do I have to listen? And like you said, learn the art of responding appropriately, because nobody likes to feel like someone's trying to change them. They need the autonomy and dignity to feel like they're able to change and grow and develop.
Absolutely.
In their own process.
And that's where trust is built. And that's where safety is built. And that's where connection lives. So quite often, empathy, a lot of people think of it as learning about other people. I'm going to learn what it's like to be
just educate yourself,
a refugee or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not where empathy starts.
No.
Empathy begins with self-reflection.
Okay.
Empathy begins with self-care, because if you love to give advice, if you're that person, if you're one of those should just people, oh, you should just do this, you should listen to the podcast.
If I were you, you should.
Yeah, if I was you, I'd do this. If you're one of those people that really, we look at this in the workshops, but you have to really look inwards and go, well, why do I do that? And quite often it comes from insecurity or perfectionism, which can stem from insecurity. And it comes from this
idealism.
And I value, or I believe that I am valued for how smart I am, getting things right, in my usefulness. And the trouble is, we're not valued for our usefulness. We are valued for
Inherently.
Our presence,
mm-hmm.
for just being you and giving someone space to be themselves.
Wow.
So because we're projecting our insecurities, and we go, oh, a big emotion, I'm uncomfortable with that, I kind of want to make it go away, so you should just do this, because that shows how smart I am, because then I get my value, so I feel smart, I feel helpful. But in essence, what I've done is made the person feel like rubbish, because I've pushed them away and said, oh, your emotions aren't safe here.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think we do that consciously all the time. I think it's an unconscious.
Absolutely.
Like you said, it's the insecurity, the narrative in our mind that we constantly trying to, you know, fix and solve that's unconsciously there.
Absolutely.
And we just fall into it because, like you said, we haven't, some would say you put the face, you know, the mask on yourself first before you assist somebody else. So I love that idea of stop, pause, reflect on yourself, make sure that you're in a secure place. We could go down rabbit holes about the Enneagram, which I don't know if you've heard of before, but that's something that's been a tool to help be a very self-aware, self-reflective tool to know what are the narratives, what are the stories, what are the ways in which I habitually fall into in wanting to, you know, be my best, but it's like the kryptonite, the thing that you become really good at can actually be the thing that prevents you from really being, like you said, present and there for someone without an agenda, right?
Without not making it about you.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the biggest misperceptions about empathy training, so a lot of people will say, oh, you don't need empathy training. You're either born with it or you're not.
Yeah.
And I'm like, which inherently is not an empathetic statement. So where are we going with that? But one of the misperceptions is that I'm going to add to your emotional load. And I'm not. Empathy training is more about reframing your thinking and unlearning some of the unhelpful stuff.
Mm.
So unlearning judgment, assumptions, expectations, stigma, unlearning that stuff. So then you are comfortable with the unknown. You're comfortable with the vulnerable.
Oh, wow.
Because you've taken the pressure off yourself to have a responsibility for that person's emotions or for their stuff, and getting out of that burden of feeling like you are responsible for fixing.
Yeah.
And if you sit in that space, then you don't have to come up with the perfect answer and saying, wow, thank you so much for telling me that. That's huge. I've actually no idea how to respond to that, but it's really important that you told me. Let's figure it out. And just inviting that person and being curious about that human as a human being in and of their whole self, because you are a human being in and of your whole self who deserves to be heard, as are they.
Yeah.
So one of the reframing our thinking is people are humans to be heard, not problems to be solved.
Yes.
If we can reframe our thinking just a little bit to go, they're not asking for a solution. That person's not broken. That person at their absolute core, and we do a bunch of activities around this.
Yeah, yeah.
But at their absolute core, every single human being that you meet is desperate to feel heard. So if you can live your life in service of that, then you reframe your thinking a little bit to think, oh, that person doesn't need my help. They don't need me to fix them unless they ask me to.
Or they just, ask for help in some
specific way. Unless they specifically ask for my help, that's different.
Yeah.
But unsolicited advice will destroy a relationship so quick.
Oh, my goodness. I went on a I went on a 1 week retreat in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was a retreat to help. Yeah, it was beautiful in the countryside. There was equine therapy, and it was like a kind of a therapy kind of retreat. I'd burnt out. Speaking of burnout and compassion fatigue and not caring for yourself, I'd spent 3.5 years in Iraq, and we'd been through a lot, and so I just, you know, my wife and I in separate weeks went away to this place called Onsite. Shout out to them. They're incredible in the US, and Marzad Cox and the team there are phenomenal. And one of the, you know, the practices was, we just spend some time in group therapy together, hearing each other's stories, but the one thing you were never allowed to do was give advice. You were allowed to kind of put yourself in their shoes and try and see how what they've experienced taught mm-hmm. you about your life and be self-reflective, but it was never like you just were not allowed to give advice. I loved how you mm-hmm. kind of emphasize that that unsolicited advice is a big no-no.
Because we think about it. And I mean, one of the things that I didn't mention before is one of my key drivers in this whole thing, you know, they talk about what is your why? Yeah. My why is I had postnatal depression.
Okay.
And tell I had it that. Pretty bad. Oh. But mine didn't sort of present as what at the time everybody looked at as postnatal depression, like Leanne's sad. When I was with my kids and they were sort of 1, 2, 3 years old, I would be either a massive weeping mess on the floor and I'd have a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old rubbing my back going, mummy, mummy, we're sorry, mummy, how can we make it better? And I'm just going, I've no idea.
Oh my.
but mine also presented as postnatal rage. So I was just this fuming, raging beast for however many years, and I had anxiety and I wasn't eating. And but what happened was I came to a point when Zara was about, so she's my youngest, was about 18 months old. And I just had this child, you know, like by the shoulders, and I was kind of raging in her face and just put myself in mummy time out and just reeled backwards. But it wasn't for another 18 months. So it wasn't until Zara was 3 that I actually was diagnosed with postnatal depression.
Wow.
And it got to the point where I nearly hurt her and I nearly hurt myself. I was ready to just drive off into the sunset and go, nah, ta-ta, I'm out. But what happened was I had a beautiful, lovely GP lady who said, oh, sweetheart, this is bigger than you think it is. And I'm like, okay. Because all I had heard up until that point was everybody goes through it. The days are long. The years are short. We all get through it. Just have a drink. Just go for a walk. Cherish these moments. And I couldn't think of anywhere I wanted to be less. And it really affected me. And so what happened was because all of these people around me, they had good intentions, but they couldn't communicate it in a way that actually made me feel safe. It was all dismissal. And because of that, I also dismissed it in myself. We weren't talking about it. People like me, I had 2 all-natural water births, no drugs, no stitches. People like me.
Wow.
Don't get postnatal depression. And so there was this huge stigma both within myself and an unknowing around me and a lack of empathy and understanding and empathetic communication from people who genuinely had good intentions. But it meant that I wasn't diagnosed and I went on medication for about 15 months after that. But it occurred to me that if I had hurt either of my children or myself, I would be the absolute villain in that situation. It would have made the front page of the paper. How could a mother do this? Wow. And I know exactly how a mother can do this.
Wow.
And
wow.
I didn't need an action plan. I didn't need like people on red alert around me. I needed a hug. I needed support and I needed kindness and a bit of medication to rub out the lows and like also 100%. Rub out the highs. But when we look at people, and there's a lot of conversation in this mental health space, it's very intellectual. It's what do people need and how do we identify an action plan and solutions? And it's not. It's we need to listen not with an open mind, but with an open heart. And say to people, how are you today? Like, how are you really? Because I'm genuinely interested. Not because I'm trying to think of the next solution and I'm trying to think of how I can be useful and I'm going to make it about me and I'm going to tell you about my sister and I'm going to.
Yes.
So that's one of the things that I'm really interested in is that language piece.
Yeah.
Because I think in a way, in terms of the mental health discussion, the time for awareness is almost past. It's now the time to actually self-reflect and take action and not just think that we can throw checklists and money at this anymore.
Let me tell you about one of our partners, Freedom Broadband. They're an incredible profit-for-purpose business. Freedom Broadband is your all-in-one internet and telephone service provider, whether it's for your business or your home. Now, their internet connection and speeds are simply amazing, and they're in another league when it comes to the quality of their customer service. But here's what really sets them apart. When you switch to any of their services, they'll donate $5 every month to a nonprofit cause of your choice. As the founder of You Belong, an Australian-based nonprofit charity, one of the greatest challenges we face is fundraising. And I think I can speak for almost all leaders in the nonprofit world when I say that being able to have a residual income coming into your accounts to support your work is a dream come true. And like most nonprofits, our work is dependent on the generous support of individuals and groups that share our passion to empower refugees to integrate and thrive here in Australia. What that means is that we spend more time and energy looking for ways to raise support. And what I desperately love to be doing is spending that time and our limited resources developing and growing the many successful programs that we run. But here's where our friends at Freedom Broadband come in. You see, a few months back, I was on a 4G wireless connection at home through one of the largest phone and internet companies here in Australia. And each month I was nervous about going over our usage, getting a nasty bill at the end. And I was working on a lot of the podcasting and videos at home, and the speeds I was getting were just painfully debilitating. And I finally decided to give Freedom Broadband a call. And within 2 minutes, I was on the call with Graham completing my application. And within a week, I had completely switched over to their $79 a month unlimited plan. And I can tell you firsthand, the service has been phenomenal. And I have a direct line to their customer service team whenever I have a question or need assistance. Now the studio and office where I work has switched over to Freedom Broadband as well. We're on their business plan and we haven't looked back. And how cool is this? Little by little, connection by connection, Aussie-owned and locally run Freedom Broadband is now actively supporting the great work of nonprofits in communities all around Australia. Simply by switching your internet to Freedom Broadband, you can help transform the lives of those less fortunate. And that's why I love these guys. Get this, head to freedombroadband.com.au and quote Justice Matters on your application form, and they will donate $50 from the activation fee to support Justice Matters. That's going to enable us to continue this podcast and inspire the world where everyone belongs. That's freedombroadband.com.au. Say goodbye to expensive, mediocre internet with poor customer service and hello to top-notch internet service and the good feeling of knowing you're supporting a great cause. Join Freedom Broadband today. Quote Justice Matters and let's partner together with the internet that's helping to change the world.
So, Leanne, thank you. No, seriously, thank you for being so raw and about your own story. I appreciate you sharing that with me and the audience. It's a powerful thing, your own journey. And when you can take the pain and take that experience, that very unpleasant experience that I'm sure you felt, and use that as fuel for your why, that's inspirational. Oh, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
You know, what would, here's, I get to ask for some advice now. When it comes to the area of, you know, I think a lot of people that are in justice oriented works, yes, that are out there on the front lines, humanitarians, you know, you think of people that are paramedics, or they could be in real service and wanting to make a difference and wanting to, you know, they're real self-giving people, right? Yes. And it comes naturally to them, and that's the careers that just seems to be good. How can they, after self-reflection, how can they ensure that still they don't suffer, or they can, you know, get into the path of compassion fatigue, and other. Could you give some advice around, or just some practical things maybe that would be really helpful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a lot to unpack there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I also do is I have a podcast, and what we do is we explore empathy in different professions.
Brilliant.
So we've talked about empathy in paramedicine, empathy in childhood surgery, firefighters, police, all sorts of things.
A friend of mine runs veterinarians. He's saying vets people that are involved in that industry are committing suicide at an
alarmingly
high rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, vets.
Like, absolutely. You listen to the Empathy in Vets podcast with Dr. Evan Shaw.
Wow.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. And you just want to go and hug a vet.
Yeah, yeah.
But back to your question. So one of the things that's really important for people in general, and after we do the self-reflecting as to why am I in this role and what is it that I want and where do I see my value and what makes me feel good, a lot of people will come up with the answer is that it's give, 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 give. They are selfless. Mm-hmm. And if they are that perfectionist type of person, sometimes that can be a protective mechanism. Sometimes, because it means that if I'm focusing so much on other people, I don't have to really worry about focusing on myself. So that's that can be. But what I want people to know is we go back to those definitions of empathy. And we need to be talking about the same thing, because when we talk about compassion fatigue, what can happen is people are stuck and stuck in that emotional empathy piece.
Yeah.
I'm jumping down that person's rabbit hole and I don't regroup after. I jump down that person's rabbit hole and I don't regroup after. So one of the things that we talk about is empathy begins and ends with self-care. So it's getting back to what is your role in that relationship, even if it's just momentarily. And Sammy Bullard talks about this beautifully in the paramedicine one, but it's what is my role in this? How can I show up and be of service in this moment? What does that person need from me? And it's knowing that you have emotional boundaries and that you're allowed to have emotional boundaries, but emotional empathy is not where you are most effective.
Right.
Compassionate empathy is where you are most effective. And you can feel some things.
Yeah, sure.
But what we need to do is make sure that we're not jumping down the rabbit hole and then not taking care of ourselves after.
Yeah.
So it has to be I regroup, I take my own support, and which means then I can bring my full whole self to the next person.
Right.
Because if I keep jumping down these rabbit holes, what happens then is I can't bring myself to the next person. And that destroys somebody. If I see as my value is to help people and give, and I can't give anymore, then there's a whole other level of feelings that bubble up, because then I feel almost guilty that I can't bring my whole self. And that's where we tend to shut down.
It's just a cyclical thing, isn't it?
You just absolutely
get cyclical.
Absolutely. So what we want is for people, you're allowed to feel the feelings.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
fine. You're allowed to put yourself in people's shoes. That's fine. Because that both of those things can help. They are very useful.
Yeah.
But we need to remember that your role is to listen, make that person feel heard, valued, and visible, while also honoring your own self, your own boundaries.
Oh, I love that. It's like there's dignity for the person, but there's dignity for yourself. There's
absolutely
empowerment for the person, but there's a sense of like I'm going to love myself as well and not just.
But you are a better practitioner. You are a better practitioner of whatever it is that you do. If you are bringing your whole self to that person.
Yes.
But the thing that I've learned is not only the value of self-care and whatever that means to you and having interests and activities outside of what it is that you do, but the value of team So whether it's Jamie talking about emergency medicine or emergency nursing, or Tammy talking about paramedicine, the value of team is paramount. So you must have an empathetic team.
Wow. So a culture, really.
Absolutely. So there's two more things that we really need to focus on, because what happens is when we talk about empathy in some of those highly emotional roles, it only goes in one direction, and that's down, which is empathy for our beneficiaries. So whoever it is we're trying to help, that's the only direction empathy goes. When we talk about empathy training, there's three directions of empathy. Empathy for self must come first. Empathy for our peers and giving them a safe space, as well as empathy for the beneficiary. Because if it's give, and we neglect the team and we neglect ourselves, we are doing a disservice to the beneficiary. We're doing a disservice to our clients. So it has to come back to an empathetic leadership, empathetic teams, which means that we all then have the space and the boundaries and the support and the love that we need to keep on showing up for our clients, our customers, our beneficiaries. So it has to be three ways.
Yeah. Otherwise, but I love the order. I love the fact that you've ordered that, though.
It has to be. And we can't do it without empathetic leadership as well. It has to be a top-down approach.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And probably why the QUT students, when we first got together, said, you know, what's the one thing you feel is lacking or most needed in leadership today? It's empathy. So I don't think you'll be without a job, hopefully. it's there's so many books written on leadership, and it's probably one of the least areas that's probably been been covered.
The difficulty is, though, the difficulty is probably twofold. Firstly, a lot of people don't realize there's something called an empathy gap. And an empathy gap is the difference between how empathetic I think I am and how empathetic you think I am. And unless we're genuinely asking those questions, then that can be a bit of a barrier. So that's where self-reflection again comes in, and getting curious and asking people and really looking at how people respond to you, and asking people genuinely, like, was that okay?
How did that make you feel?
Exactly. I really want to get this right, because that's the type of person we are. We want to help people. Our intentions are good. But the other piece of the puzzle is there is a real business case for this. And it's until people are open to there being a business case for this, because they go, well, that's how it's always been done. Profit over people, bottom line, this is how we measure it. Instead of actually going, well, hang on. Businesses that are most empathetic not only have higher profits, but they have less turnover.
Yes.
And it costs 6 to 9 months salary to replace somebody. They have better brand reputation.
Yes.
Because if we're talking about a negative interaction we've had with, let's say, a bank teller, I'm not saying, Janet, the bank teller was horrible to me. I go, hey, that bank sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm telling 10 people that that bank sucks.
Yes.
And it's probably not Janet's fault. It's probably Janet's boss's fault. So there's really, we've got to start looking at better ways to do things and really taking a human-centered approach to this, but being ready for the answers, because this is not something that we can checklist. This is not something that we can just throw money at. We actually have to do the work and really internalize why this matters.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I think that perfectly dovetails into one of our last questions here. It's been phenomenal. And I can't wait to get this out there. But you've mentioned about this idea of there being a win-win, right? So it doesn't have to be, and what drew you so much to social enterprise, right, is that it doesn't have to be profit over people or planet or purpose, that if we can actually marry the two, and social enterprise being a way in which you see that happening. I know Dr. Ruth Knight is like absolutely like the biggest spokesman for. I interviewed someone about co-ops and mutuals and how that can create a real just society. There's so many ways in which
absolutely
even for-profit businesses can still, like you said, do this. But maybe talk a little bit about, you know, your passion for social enterprise or what it is that kind of for you is so important in that whole win-win scenario.
Yeah. So the way that I describe social enterprise and the way that I talk about social enterprise is it has three elements.
Mm.
The first element is do good.
Yeah.
The second element is do well. So do good is solve a problem in the world.
Mm.
Do well is generate a revenue in order to fund the solving of the problem.
Yeah.
And the third piece is be good. So do good, do well, be good.
Wow.
And it's when you look
at those... gold right now.
This is social enterprise 101. But that's how I draw it. So whenever I'm looking at a business, what'll happen is a lot of businesses will do just the do well piece, and that's our muggle businesses. We're not. You've got some businesses who are trying really hard to do the do well, be good piece.
Mm.
That's our, you know, like our B Corps and CSR, things like that. They're trying to do what they normally do, but they're trying to be good while they're doing it. Social enterprise then does the do good piece, which is the really trying to
make a difference,
change something. What happens then is, in the be good piece, we look at supply chain and we look at ethical practice and we look at where does our plastic come from and all those sorts of things. But it has to also come into internal empathy. So be good has to be internal as well.
Mm.
So we have to care for our people. We're not just give to our beneficiaries. So once we realize that be good is a really key piece of social enterprise, then we start to look at the people and we look at our beneficiaries as people and we look at our team. And that's where the real magic happens, is when you get those three pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, really good.
So that's my love of social enterprise, is that real ability to be agile, be creative. Because that's the other thing, is when you are in I know I said that empathy is the first step of design. So that's designing with people. But when you have an internal culture of empathy and everybody feels heard, valued, and visible, that's where the magic happens in terms of innovation and creativity. That's when you come up with the really good stuff of creating solutions with people, in terms of your marketing or your enterprise piece, in terms of your social piece, actually really making sure that that's working for and with the people that whose lives you want to change. But unless empathy is at the heart of the whole thing, it doesn't work, because it has to be at the start of design. It has to be in the team, because that's where the good stuff happens. That's where people flourish and thrive, and it's no longer just about workplace well-being.
It's not just like a checklist. We do this for our staff, and we've got this program,
absolutely.
And we give them that, and like check, it's more done than that.
Next thing, are you okay day once a year? We do that. Well-being Wednesdays, there's apples in the break room, we've offered you yoga.
But that's the difference between, I guess, a program and a culture, and cultivating an actual culture, which, like you said, starts at the top, right?
It has to come down.
As much as we think you can have some phenomenal people at the bottom trying to influence up, but they will get worn down eventually by the culture that's set from those at the top. You've dropped some incredible gold, and I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to be reaching out to you to learn some more. I love that you've really framed what real empathy is. And my final question really is, you know, is how do you see empathy creating a just world where everyone belongs. It's kind of the heart of my podcast is and the charity that I'm privileged to have found is called You Belong, which is that emphasis on, you know what, just as you are, you already belong. And it was inspired by Maya Angelou, an American poet and civil rights activist, who said, you are only free when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place. No place at all. And it's just, for me, such a profound statement. And so in wanting to create this world of justice where there's fairness, tell us, give us the why is empathy and how can it be such a powerful force for good in creating that?
Because when you get empathy right, when you and you will mess up from time to time, but when you genuinely strive to get empathy right and you see a person as their whole self, their whole imperfect, messy self who deserves to be heard and valued and visible. And you know, and part of empathy, so this is another nugget for you. Part of empathy is empathy cannot coexist with judgment, assumptions, or expectations.
Come on.
You have to choose. So you can't judge people if they've told you or just for who they are. You can't make assumptions about how they should be behaving. And you can't have expectations of how you would react, how they would react. You have to choose one or the other. If you are making a conscious effort to choose empathy, to learn about that person with curiosity, kindness, and compassion and no judgment.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
Then you cannot have a world without justice. You cannot tell somebody, well, no, you don't belong here. It's, oh, sweetheart, come. And so we talk about language tools and language tips. And one of the last ones is always be together, which is let's. It's that let's language. Let's figure it out. Let's sit together. Let's go for a walk. Let's have a coffee.
It's inclusive. It's not them, us mentality. It's
we're
in this together.
It's none of that scarcity mindset stuff. It's all, hang on, you can be you as your whole self, and that has zero impact on me and who I am, because your awesome doesn't make me less awesome. So it's you are you, I am me. And I have a lovely diagram of this. But once you get what it is, why it's important, how to communicate with empathy, and you really internalize that and you do the work, then you can't judge people.
Yeah.
You can't have expectations or assumptions of people, because you know that it is completely contradictory to compassionate empathy.
Yeah.
So one of the podcasts we did was about empathy and incarceration.
Yeah, wow.
And it's beautiful because when we talk about, well, what goes into it, and so much that we cover in a 3 or 4 hour workshop, it is amazing the amount that we cover.
Come on.
But when we look at who somebody is and how they got to this point and what their behavior might be a reflection of, you go, well, I just want to hug you because I know what's gone in. We often ask the question, well, I don't understand their words or their behavior. Okay. What might they be afraid of or insecure about?
Yeah.
That'll give you an insight. And then you either judge them for it or you embrace them with empathy. So when we had, I mean, like I said, I did this with American cops over in Iowa, and I had a 6'7" cop come up to me after the workshop and say, thank you so much. I just want to go home and hug my daughter. When we change the language from I deal with these people to I interact with, I care for, I live with, I have a relationship with. It's all about the language that we use and how we view humans as humans to be heard, not problems to be solved.
Absolutely brilliant. I think we're all going to go away from this and be like, I need to be curious. I need to be curious about myself and my own insecurities. I need to be curious about other people. and not judge, and be kind first. Mm-hmm. I like your shirt, be kind. And and I think, like you said, that is the heart of true compassionate
Absolutely.
Empathy. You've totally enriched my afternoon, and it's been a privilege chatting with you. And how can people find about you? I'll put links to your website in your, but is there ways that you'd like people absolutely. To reach out or tell us if there's a
best place to find me is empathyfirst.com.au.
Yeah.
You can follow from there are all the links on Instagram and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. It's Empathy First HQ. You can hit me up on LinkedIn. I love Brilliant. LinkedIn.
All right.
But yeah, Empathy First. And I've got free online courses. So I've got a free online course on how to write emails with empathy. I've got a empathy fundamentals course. We can work out group workshops. I can come to workplaces, and then the podcast is on there as well. So the next, we've just done midwives and politicians.
Oh, wow.
Coming up, we've got sex work and change management.
So unbelievable.
I love it so much.
Ah, it's so good. Well, it's been a pleasure talking from one podcaster to another, and someone who's out there just using their life and their experiences to make a difference in this world. It's been a joy, Leanne, and go check her out. And thanks so much for chatting. It's been great.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Justice Matters. I'd also like to shout out to the Patreon community that financially supports this podcast. Guys, thank you so much for your support. And you can join them simply by going to patreon.com/justicematters, where a simple donation of $5 a month, you can become part of the Patreon community and get access to behind-the-scenes content and extras that I share just with you. And lastly, there is another really important way that you can help support the podcast, and that's simply by rating it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, maybe by subscribing on YouTube. Yes, we are a video podcast as well. Guys, thank you so much for listening in to this episode of Justice Matters. Please come again soon. I can't wait to share more episodes with you. Thank you so much. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Thanks for listening.